Welcome to Infra NDEV Podcast, the show that shines a spotlight on the incredible opportunities and challenges of infrastructure development in Africa. I'm your host, Mamoudou Bokoum, and together we'll explore the dynamic world of African infrastructure and its impact on shaping the future of this vibrant continent. Today, we explore the opportunities to revitalize rail transportation in Africa with George Colbeck, Global Director of the Transport Unit at CPCS. The interview is broadcast in two parts. In this 26th episode, George addresses the following key questions. What are the characteristics of the current railway network in Africa? Why is the railway network on the continent dropped from 100,000 km at the beginning of the 20th century to around 75,000 km today? What are the main challenges for rail transport development in Africa? How have the challenges changed over time? In which situations rail should be prioritized over other transport modes such as road? What trends are we currently seeing in Africa for rail transport development? What have been the primary drivers of railway transport revitalization initiatives in several African countries? Our guest, George, is a professional engineer by training with a civil engineering degree and a Master of Business Administration in Finance. George has a successful track record of delivering management consulting assignments in the transport sector in Canada, Asia, and Sub-Saharan Africa. Prior to joining CPCS, he held management positions at the Canadian National Railway in operations, infrastructure maintenance, and financial and strategic planning. Joining CPCS in 2006, George applied his breadth of railway knowledge to wide-ranging rail projects, including feasibility studies, infrastructure and functional designs, condition assessment and rehabilitation plans, upgrading and performance studies, and transition advisory. He currently leads the CPCS Transport Unit. Thank you very much, George, for being with us today.
My pleasure.
I mean, we already had in this show some people from CPCS, including Jean-François Arsenault, Clara, and Liz, Elizabeth Drake. Today, we are having you to talk about railway in Africa. Maybe before just moving on this topic, if you could, as the Transport Global Unit Director within CPCS, talk a little bit about the services you provide.
Absolutely. Thank you. CPCS, as you're well aware, Mamoudou, is a management consulting firm that specializes in transport powers and PPP. We're Canadian-based with our roots in the Canadian rail sector. And we have operations all throughout the world, but with a really, really large emphasis on Africa. I like CPCS, my roots are in the Canadian rail sector. So prior to joining CPCS, I was heavily involved with CN Rail, one of the class ones in North America. And since joining CPCS, I've worked on rail projects throughout the world, and again, big emphasis on Africa. And currently, I'm a partner with CPCS and lead the global transport unit. And CPCS is a matrix organization with profit responsibility and project ownership on the horizontal axis with geographic divisions, and on the vertical axis, we've got global units, including power, PPP, transport, infrastructure analytics, and I'm responsible for the transport global unit. And within that, we've got subsector or sector experts, and we got some transportation and generalists, and we support the divisions on projects, project execution and proposal work and marketing throughout the world. So wherever we work, experts within the transportation global unit will support the visions and pursue work as well in all parts of the world.
And as I was saying in the introduction, you have worked like 17 years with CPCS, and you know very well, I would say, the Africa network. If you were to describe this current railway network in Africa, how would you describe it?
I mean, it's largely disjointed and for the most part, dysfunctional, unfortunately. there are some exceptions to that. The Cape Gauge network of Southern Africa has a reach to be a truly called a network, though it is dealing with a lot of operational issues, including in South Africa. But it does have the expanse and the reach to be a network. Some of the mining railways in West Africa and many are being constructed now, and some are being rehabilitated now. But they too they provide rail service that would be considered operational, though most of them aren't really part of the network. There's some passenger lines and operations in North Africa and elsewhere that are functional and operating with some level of efficiency. And then largely there are a few countries with functional railways. I mean, the new SGR in Kenya, be it one, and Gabon is another country that's had consistent levels of traffic over the last 30 years. Consistent operations and seems like a sustainable operation with a good balance of traffic. So there are successes, though largely it's disjointed and much of it is dysfunctional at this point.
So largely disjointed and dysfunctional. The other things that we have seen is really a drop of the railway network size. We went from 100,000 kilometers at the beginning of the 20th century to around 75,000 kilometers today. What do you think are the main causes of this drop?
Yeah, I think, the downward cycle probably started in the 60s, as it did in many places in most of the world. And the largest reason, the first impetus for this was the advent of the road transport for freight and passengers. Roads in most places are a public good with no user fees to the users of the road. And the road sector blossomed, largely driven by capitalism in most of the world. But they blossomed in the 60s and 70s, new roads, better performing vehicles, and the rail lost much traffic then. And unlike many Western countries that had the resources and perhaps the vision to invest in railways, after these difficult periods in say the 80s and 90s, Africa didn't, and the decline continued. Continued to lose to road traffic. And then also, I think in the 90s, the World Bank in particular, was pushing towards more private sector participation in railways in Africa, largely through concessions. Countries were deferring investment because of the belief that sort of the private sector would resolve many of the problems and bring back the rail lines. And that largely didn't materialize. And in the turn of this century, in the first 10 years, I think there was even a further decline in many of the railways because these concessions, for the most part, weren't successful. In the last 10, 15 years, we are seeing a bit of a revival. We're certainly seeing a revival, and that's encouraging. But you're right, it's been a challenging the last 25, 30 years of the 20th century were very difficult for African railways.
I hear lack of investment, maybe probably lack of vision as well. But as you were saying, we are seeing more and more interest in trying to revitalize, to develop this railway network. Sometimes it's a regional project or national project. But as you were saying, right now we can see some challenges. What do you think are the main challenges for rail transport development in Africa?
Yeah, I think it just really at this current time it comes down to capital investment. Apart from pit to port railways with significant bulky traffic, greenfield railways will not be viable financially as standalone projects. for that matter, even in investment in brownfield railways, typically will not provide adequate financial returns. So government is needed. Government investment in one way or another is needed in railways to either bring them to life or bring them back to life. And quite often, these investments for governments do provide economic returns, but just, you know, first of all, sourcing that capital to make those investments, and then structuring in a manner that you can leverage that investment and possibly some private sector investment with that to really get the full benefits. That hasn't materialized as well as we would have liked it, but there is some promise there that there is more investment going into the sector, and it's a nice blend of private and public.
Capital investment, and you were saying at the beginning, she was the main cause maybe of this decrease in the network size in Africa. Are there other barriers, or do we see any changes in the challenges over time? Because, I mean, lack of investment or limited investment was there before. If it is still the case here, can we expect any change, I would say, in the trend?
Yeah. Relative to 60 years ago or 50 years ago, I mean, the biggest change has been is just the competitiveness of the road and trucking sector. There's been significantly more investment on the continent in roads than there has been in rail. And roads are largely considered a public good and available to both individuals and private companies to operate on. And once the investment is made, and then on account of that, there's been a significant erosion of rail market share. And as well, once the trucking sector is invested in rolling stock, it's tough to justify that that investment in rail and to win that traffic back. It's not impossible, but it's tough because truckers, once they've made they're generally smaller operators than railways. Once they've made that investment in rail, they're gonna do everything they can to generate profit with their vehicle. So probably the biggest change has just been the competition and the market domination by the road sector in the last 50, 60 years.
I see. In most of the countries in Africa, you would have like road mode having 90% of the traffic, more or less. And maybe it's not always the best mode to use, depending on what are the needs. The modes have to be complementary. Sometimes maybe railway is better suited for the need than road. Could you maybe share with us in which situation do you think we should prioritize rail over road, for example?
Yeah. I think the objective when looking at railways is how can it, best fit into a transportation system. And that system being inclusive of road, rail, and marine as applicable. Rail is very competitive when you have more traffic, longer distance, and heavier, bulkier traffic, typically ores, particularly going from, say, from a pit to a mine. So railway, they need those three things. They need bulk. They need traffic and they need distances. But railways, if you're not from A to B, from a mine to a pit, as an example, you quite often need for first and last mile, you need road. Looking at container traffic in particular, which is largely probably going to be the driver of much of the growth in rail traffic in Africa, but container traffic. Your last mile or your first mile is going to be road. So, as much as there's opportunities for rail, there's probably as much, and it will win traffic for mode. There's also opportunities. And I think in most cases, you're going to have to look at more of a collaboration between road and rail, which will, provide the best results for, for a country and for the transportation sector.
I see, using all the modes to have efficient transportation system and maybe focus rail when you have large traffic, you have long distance and maybe bulk. So we were saying earlier that there are some initiatives that try to revitalize the railway network, regional or national. What have been, from your perspective, the primary drivers of railway revitalization initiatives in several African countries?
Certainly, there's been in the last 15 years, as you're well aware, there's been an interest from some countries, and China and Turkey are the most noted, to bring financing and to construct railways in certain parts of the continent. And that has created opportunities for countries to develop or redevelop their rail sector. I think that's been the biggest driving force as of late. But beyond that, too, you know, what we're seeing in particularly in Southern Africa and even parts of Central Africa as well, a movement towards a separation of railway, where your government will retain and operate the railway, operate the below railway, so the infrastructure, train control and such. And the above rail operations will be the domain of private operators, where they will make the investment in rolling stock and operate in a more competitive environment. And I think that has just beginning to take hold. Probably the best example would be on the Tazara line, where they're currently there's three operators licensed to operate. They're at this early stage. The traffic, there's been, you know, a significant growth in traffic. It hasn't really been a cannibalizing traffic from Desera, but it's been new traffic on the line. And that seems to be the direction going, well, certainly in South Africa, where it's well publicized and there's a strong move towards franchising and concessioning, but also in some other South African countries. That too, I think we'll see some renewed investment, lead in renewed investment and some new traffic wins for the rail sector.
New business models that have facilitated infrastructure investment and some countries that are showing interest. This concludes the first part of this interview. We'll meet again in 2 weeks for the second and final part of this interview with our guest, George Colbeck, Global Director of Transport Unit at SPCS.
Le développement de l'Afrique passera inévitablement par le développement d'infrastructures qui favorisent une croissance économique durable et inclusive, une économie du bien-être. Ceci fait du développement des infrastructures une affaire pour tous, une affaire de tous. Merci beaucoup d'avoir écouté cet épisode du podcast Infrastructure et Développement. Ceci est un cadre d'échange pour vous. Partagez-le autour de vous et n'hésitez pas à nous laisser des commentaires pour nous faire part de votre appréciation et de vos suggestions d'amélioration. À très bientôt pour un autre épisode.